Welcome to the HU Movemakers Podcast, where we highlight folks that are blazing the trail and making moves in Howard culture. Welcome to the HU Movemaker Podcast, where we highlight folks that have contributed to the legacy of Howard University at the highest levels. Today we got a special guest. Special. From Trinidad and Tobago, international. International. Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority, Alpha Phi Chapter, Howard University. This magnificent woman, professional, motivational speaker. Get this, y'all. She recently published her book, Saved, Single, Secure, The Secrets. Ain't no secret no more. The Secrets to Thriving in Your Single Season. You better go ahead. Certified Life Coach. But there's more. Master of Business Administration for University of Cincinnati. Adjunct Clinical Faculty at the University of New England. Chief Resident at the Bronx Lebanon Hospital Center. Got a bachelor's in science and biology. And a doctorate of dental surgery degree. Man, Howard University's finest. Dr. Jade P. Duncan, DDS.
Yes.
MDD. She really do this. You really do this, don't you, Jay?
I do. Lifelong student.
Dr. Jay, welcome to the show. Your resume is just powerful.
Thank you.
It's powerful. I mean, from Trinidad and Tobago to Maine, I didn't know there was black folks in Maine, to be honest.
There aren't, but I'm here.
I'm glad to know that I got a friend. If I got a cavity, you know, if I need an extraction, I know where to go, Dr. Yep. Jay. So welcome, Dr. Jay. So you're from Trinidad?
Yes, I am.
Man, and you know what's so cool? I think you're the first international student or international alum that I've had on the show. So I would love to hear about your experience at Howard, you know, from a perspective of somebody from Trinidad. And then, you know, I want to know, like, how did you get from Trinidad to Maine? Like, let's take me on that journey.
From Trinidad to Maine? Well, that's a long journey, right?
Hey, well, let's talk about it. Let's get into it.
Well, let's start here. How I got from Trinidad to Howard, right?
Okay.
Well, I was born and raised in Trinidad and Tobago. I came to Howard directly from Trinidad as an international student. So you were right. I actually learned about Howard from Essence magazine.
Oh, really? Essence?
Yeah. There was an Essence magazine, and it was a huge spread about Howard University. And my dad, actually, he gets the Essence magazines, and he brought it to me, and he said, hey, there's a dental school here. You should check the school out, you know? And at that time, my brothers, I'm the youngest, and my older brothers, they both were at Morehouse. So the assumption and the expectation was for me to go to Spelman because, you know, my parents were always very protective and they wanted me to, you know, be with my big brothers so I'll be safe in the big bad America. But I'm just not built that way, right?
You built that Howard way.
I just have to always be me, you know? And when I found out that Howard had a dental school, we have a lot of college fairs in our high schools where we get recruiters from the universities to come and basically give us information on the spot, offer us scholarships based on, you know, our transcripts and stuff like that. So I went to one of them, obviously beeline to Howard, and when I found out that, you know, you just need a so-and-so SAT score to get a scholarship, I was like, oh, deal. Like, I got that. You know, scholarship, I ain't gotta pay nothing. That's where I'm going. I'm going to Howard.
So tell me about your parents, though. I mean, you got two brothers at Morehouse. Your parents must be exceptional. What type of people?
My parents are phenomenal, right? My mom and my dad, they're both apostles. They're both ministers, pastors, business people. My dad, his whole thing is motivational speaking and professional development. Mm. So he uses biblical-based principles to train governments and cabinets. And so usually when there's a change of government in like a Caribbean island or in whatever country, you know, and they're doing their team building, they bring him in and he does like those kind of things with the governments. And so he knows like all kind of people, but you'll see him and he looks like Farmer Brown. You know, he's in the garden in some boots, covered in dirt, like, you know, just so humble. My parents are like huge into education, you know, their background, they were both, my mom was a, well, you would call that elementary, but that's a primary school in Trinidad, a primary school teacher. My dad was a history teacher in a high school, and their lives just kind of morphed into what it is now, and you know, into ministry, and they kind of pushed us into education, and it was just the thing that we did, you know, like you're going to be successful. So
so how many brothers and sisters all of you us got?
Huh?
How many brothers and sisters you got?
I have two older brothers
and they both at Morehouse. So these guys raised the bar early.
Yes, my More older house. Brother is a structural engineer, and the middle brother is he's something on Wall Street. I can't keep it up. It's some sort of managing consultant, whatever you call it, on Wall Street. So he's a numbers guy, a computer analyst, software guy. So they're both pretty brilliant.
That's good to hear. So why are your parents pushing y'all to go to HBCUs?
You know, I don't know if they necessarily pushed us. I think the HBCU recruitment in my country is very strong. So I think that's really what it is, because they literally come and get us, you know, and they look for the best and brightest of us, and they say, hey, Howard is somewhere you'd feel at home. And, you know, and there's a lot of alumni who graduated from Howard who from Trinidad are the ones sitting at these tables, and they tell us, you know, about the CSA, that the Caribbean Association, and all the things that, you know, that you feel at home, and there's so many things that you can do when you get there that, you know, you feel like you're a part of family still, which is huge in our culture. And I think that may have been it. I'm not sure, but it's probably just how it turned out. I don't know.
Man, where is Trinidad?
So Trinidad is the southernmost Caribbean island. It's right above the equator. If you look at the Caribbean, it looks like a long chain of islands, and it's called the archipelago. And at the end of it, you'll see Trinidad and Tobago right next to it. It's a twin island. And right below us would be the equator, and below that would be Venezuela.
Wow. So small island?
It's a small island. It's a twin island. So Trinidad is a bigger island. Tobago is smaller. It's larger than most of the smaller Caribbean islands, but it's a tiny dot if you look at it on a map.
Got you. So, okay. So you obviously were, you know, gifted academically. You did your thing in the school. You did good on the standardized test. So you get a scholarship to Howard. Is that right?
I did.
Man, so you get a scholarship. Which one you get to Howard? Which scholarship did you get?
I think it was the capstone.
Man, the capstone.
Yeah, so it was.
You gotta be smart to get that one.
So it was like full tuition. Ooh, and honors program.
What?
Yeah.
Because Howard don't give away no money.
They do.
You must. They do, clearly. If you're smart enough,
they get away money. Smart enough. All my friends jumped on the plane, and we all had scholarships, and they all had better ones than I did. They got free laptops and everything.
What?
Uh-huh. I had to pay for my books. They got free books.
I had to pay for my books, too. Man.
Listen.
You know, I'm gonna be quiet. So anyway, so what's it like for an international student when you leaving home and you headed to Howard? Is your mindset, I got to find other Caribbeans? Are you like, I got to connect with these Americans? Are you thinking like Americans are spoiled? Like what do y'all think about us before y'all get to there? Because I know there's got to be some type of rumors about American culture.
Well, you know what's unique about West Indians? I think our education is so comprehensive. We get a world education. So it's not just limited to our countries alone. So we actually know a lot. But we know more about some histories and some people that live in those countries, right? And so I think, when you come here, you know, you have like expectations and stuff like that, but obviously culture shock, right? I think the earliest culture shock for me was obviously my accent, especially in Howard's campus. I got a lot of people who just aren't used to difference, at the beginning anyways. So I had to learn how to slow down how I spoke and use different things. So like if I will use like certain words, they'll like, haha, that's not what it's called. You know, like, you know, they don't get that there are other ways to say things and there are other ways to do things. And the other thing that was a shock was that people don't talk to you on the street, right? When you walk down the street in Trinidad, it's like, hi, how are you? Good morning. How are you? Good morning. Good morning. And I would do that and everybody look at me like, what? Why are you talking to me? You know, I'm like, what? Everybody's just like so angry here, you know? I think that's like the biggest thing, that people aren't as nice.
Yeah.
And we're used to nice people and community and stuff like that. And it's hard to build that here without trust.
Man. So what helped you adjust? What are some of the things that you did as a freshman, new to, was it your first time in America?
It wasn't my first time in America, but it was my first time living on my own in America, without anybody to fall back on. I visited, I have family members, mostly in New York, New Jersey, and we would actually spend our summer vacations up here, you know, so it wasn't like brand new for us, but for me, you know, I was spoiled, I was sheltered, and I'm out here on my own, you know, so that's it was a little bit different for me, except that I'm just so resilient. I didn't care about what could go wrong. I was just so excited to try something new. And I would credit it to my oldest brother. He gave me a formula for how to survive at an HBCU as a Caribbean student.
What'd he say?
And he gave me a list of the type of friends I should seek out in my first week on campus. Right. Okay. He was like, it was like a scavenger hunt. Right. And he's like, you find these people, I'm telling you, your life at Howard is going to be phenomenal. You know, his first thing was, you want to make sure you find somebody who is from DC. Right. That way, push come to shove, you have somebody's home that you can fall back on if you can't get out of the city for any reason or whatever. You have somebody who could be your second mom. Right. Boom. Got that. Right. Then he was like, you need somebody with a car because winter is cold and you're not going to go to the grocery store on no bus and you're not going to be riding a bus. Right. So got that. Got somebody with a car. Right. Then you have to get a friend that lives out of state so that you have somewhere to travel to. Right. So I got that. You got to find that rich friend. Got that. Right. So you don't have to pay for nothing. Right. So, you know, and then, so it's basically like a list of 10 different types of people that you need to find. And obviously when it comes to academics, you're obviously going to find the people who can kind of spar with you, who are at the same level of focus as you have, you know, and basically create that study group at the beginning and create that core group that you will move through the 4 years with, and you kind of compete with each other, and that kind of keeps you in that higher level, so you're not, you're never scrambling when you're around people who are getting the same grades you're getting. You sort of maintain and you can kind of float a little bit.
Stay away from me.
Well, I don't know what you did, but it doesn't matter now, right? But at that time, that's what worked. That's what worked best for me, especially because when you come from an island like I have, and you know, you come to the bright lights in a big bad world of America, we get distracted a lot, and a lot of people end up losing their scholarships and going back home with their head down and, you know, waste all this money, all this time, and they come back with no degree. And that was not going to be my story. So, you know, we had to
have a strategy. Was that a common thing that people would come?
And, you know, it really was. Really? It really was. And you didn't commonly see that at Howard because we had a community, but a lot of people who ended up at PWIs and didn't have that support, you know, that really was a story that you just hear time after time, or who got pregnant, or who got a girl pregnant, or who lost their scholarship because, you know, they were partying too much, or, you know, started on drugs or whatever. You know, it's always some sort of story that, you know,
so why not go to a PWI? Why come to a HBCU from Trinidad?
Well, I applied to many places and I went where the money took me. right? And I did get a couple of scholarships. The scholarship I got to Spelman was better than the one at Howard, but, you know, I chose Howard because I just wanted to be as far away from everybody as I could. That was my mentality then anyways.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it looks like it worked out for you.
Well, it did.
In the end, I mean, come on now.
It did. It worked out in the middle,
Dr. J. Duncan, DDSMED. Yeah. Come on now.
Uh-huh.
So, all right, so you at Howard. I mean, is it like a thing when you leave? Are your folks or is it a thing to say, man, you got to find the Caribbean students and connect with them? Or is it just you get in where you fit in when it comes to friends?
I think I was sort of an anomaly, you know. I don't know. I mean, obviously, you know, I was a part of the Caribbean Students Association, and I have a lot of phenomenal friends, you know, that were Trinidadian, Jamaican, you know, as a part of the African Students Association and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, I am from the Caribbean, you know, I'm in a new place. I want to experience that, you know. So I was more interested in learning something that I didn't already know, you know. So the majority of my friend bag, if you want to say it, that I filled up were, you know, people from many different places, you know, and I really wanted to get that that college experience. I didn't know anything about sororities because that wasn't a word that was in our vocabulary in the Caribbean. We really didn't know what that is. So I think I discovered what it really was when I got here, you know. It would be more hinted towards like being like cultish or some sort of like a lodge type of thing. That's the closest thing that we have to describe it. And so when I got here and I realized how beautiful it was, I'm like, well, who says I can't do it? You know, and then obviously people are like, oh, you know, they don't really take international students and, you know, you have
true?
To be,
that's not,
you know, well,
that's
no,
true,
that's what the rumors were. Oh, right. Okay. So, you know, so most people wouldn't do it because that's what we thought. Right. Really? And, well, because it just is so foreign to us and we don't understand the culture. So how are we going to align ourselves to be able to...
But these sororities and fraternities, they got chapters all over the world.
And they do. And that's what a lot of people don't know that, right? Mm. And that's something that I learned. And when I realized that people are just people, it doesn't matter what colors they wore, you know, they're just people, you know, and they align themselves with what they like and you do what you want. And I'm like, well, why not? You know, I'm a member of Howard University. I'm a student here. I have the same rights as everybody else. And, you know, and I'm going to go for it. You know,
did you ever feel like you were treated different as an international student?
At Howard?
Yeah.
No way. I don't think so. I think Howard undergrad anyways was absolutely phenomenal. I can't even tell you a bad thing, you know, because I guess I didn't have that A building experience because I never had to worry about like the checks were cash, you know, my tuition was paid. So I never had to worry about like all that drama stuff. So all I got was the culture. Mm-hmm. Right. And it was just so rich. It was so exciting. I can't say anything bad, you know, and of course I stayed in like the best dorm. So it was like, it really, I didn't, you know, there was no roaches, like, you know, it was just awesome.
So what about like the stigma for like, and like, can Americans, like if I wanted to be in like the Caribbean Students Association, do I have to be from the Caribbean? Can I just be somebody that appreciates Caribbean culture?
You can be whoever you want to be. Case in point, my roommate, you know, she ended up being an international pal and she's 100% American.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
And just from hanging out with us, you know, she started to love our culture and she knew it so much that she was able to mentor incoming international students.
That's,
you know,
no, I was a campus pal myself. And
there you go.
Yeah, you know, but looking back, I'm like, man, you know, I wish I would have like had that handbook like your brother gave you, because I would have definitely joined like the African Students Association. There's so many things that you don't really appreciate until you leave Howard. You're like, damn, I could have had some African friends, some Caribbean friends, and been taking those trips. And instead of staying at hotels, you know, I could have been hanging with Howard people when I went to Jamaica or whatever.
There you go.
You know, that's a game changer. So
yes.
So when you get on campus, freshman year, what's your major?
What's my major?
Yeah, your major. What are you majoring in?
Biology.
Biology.
Yes, and I'm minoring in chemistry.
Wow, that's just tough. You know, I was a bio major for like a week, and then you know, I was like, that's not for me. I didn't take one biology class. I majored in it, And I just took classes from the School of Business. And then after 2 years, I just transferred. I just followed my own scheme.
Well,
like before, like they was relying on internet and all of this. So it was kind of like no accountability at Howard.
What's that, general studies?
I was a bio major, but I got the School of Business scheme. And I just saw the classes that I need to take. And I just started taking them. And nobody said nothing. You know what I'm saying? Nobody ever said anything. And then before you know it, I just had to go tell them, like, hey, I want to be in the School of Business. And you had to have, like, a 3.0. So I was good at that point, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's just funny how that works. But, yeah, so you're a bio major. So you knew you wanted to be a doctor. Is that right?
100%. I knew I wanted to be a dentist since I was 3 years old.
Let me ask you about that. So they say dentists. And I don't believe this. My best friends, the best man at my wedding is a dentist. They try to say the dentists are the ones that like can't do like med school or whatever. Have you ever heard something like that?
I don't think anybody would dare say that to my face. This is the first time I'm hearing that.
I mean, you know, I'm just asking. But I was a bio major because it was two black dentists on my block, and they kept telling me how you gonna make this much money. They kept like. But I just saw that scheme, and I was too intimidated. But now that I look back, like, my friends that are dentists, like, they kind of, like, one of them worked part-time, and he make, like, 80 grand. He's like, I don't even want to work more than 20 hours a week. He was like, that's all I want to do. I got another friend, he makes, like, 250 grand, and he works a 40-hour week. You know what I'm saying? Looking back, I'm like, damn, you know. I should have applied myself and did that. But it's just so, like, you know, when you're young and make your own decisions, you just don't realize it. But I'm glad you said it. Nobody would ever say that to your face. But it's just funny. It's just funny how, like, when you hear things and you don't have the education behind it, you just make a bad choice, you know, when you're young. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think that they're, you know, especially the way how life is so dynamic. I don't think that there's any, especially at that age, you're curious, you're discovering who you are, and if that's the decision you made based on what you thought then, that's just what it was, you know. And it's, I don't think you should have any like regrets about that, because if you didn't want to be that, then you just wasn't, you know. And who says
I want to be
well
that.
You can do it now.
it's too late. And I'm not taking no bio classes.
There's
I just
no
want to skip. I want to skip bio class, chemistry, all that, and just be straight dentist. Can I do that?
No.
Yeah, then I can't do it. Never
you
mind.
You can't. You'll have a very hard time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. So obviously, you strike me as a person that likes to be challenged academically. Like, you don't really look for the easy way out, because you majoring in bio, minoring in chemistry. That's like self-imposed, like, pain. You know,
yeah, it actually wasn't that hard.
I knew you was gonna say that.
It really wasn't.
It really wasn't.
It was not at all. There was no challenge at all.
So not even in med school?
Dental school was horrible.
Oh, that was tough. But undergrad was pretty.
Yeah,
kind of had on lock. Okay.
Dental school. I mean, undergrad was. I mean, I had a lot of fun.
I like that. I mean. You know, and I really want people to watch this, especially people that are from other countries that are considering coming to Howard. And, you know, I want them to hear your experience, especially as someone who kind of, you know, excelled in undergrad and obviously in your current career. So what made you decide to become a Sigma Gamma Rho?
You know, I'm thinking back and I'm trying to remember what that thought process was like. It just wasn't anything deep. It wasn't any like
really
epiphany or anything like that. It was like eeny meeny miny mo, pick one and I'm gonna do this.
But like, you know, at Howard, you know, the overwhelming majority of women become AKs and deltas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like they have big lines. So I always wonder, you know, because in some other parts of the country, Sigma Gamma Rho is like that. Zetas are like that. But at Howard, it's, at least when I was there, a lot of women want to be AKAs or deltas. So right. I always wondered, you know, what's the thought process of, you know, wanted to, you know, choosing Sigma Gamma Rho. I'm sure you did a ton of research and you met a bunch of cool people. Mm-hmm. You probably did more research than the average person because, you know, it was, you thought it was like a cult, at least that was the perception of it. So I'm just wondering, like, what did you see in that organization that kind of drew you to it?
I think for me, number one, you brought up a great point that, you know, everybody was doing something, and knowing me and you getting to know me a little bit, if everybody's doing something, I'm going to do the opposite. And if something seems, if the pathway seems possible for so many people to do it, that's not challenging enough for me. No shade to anybody, but I have to feel as though I'm going towards something that I had to work for, if that make any sense. And one thing that struck me about the SGROs on campus were, they were just themselves. Like, if they weren't wearing their letters, no idea. You know, like, they just chill. You know, like, I'm me, I'm Jade, and I'm Jade with my letters on, Jade without my letters on, I'm the same me. I'm Jade before I pledge, I'm Jade after I pledge. Like, there's no change in who I am. You know, there were so many different types of people, and there was no way that you can paint one picture of an SGRO and everybody can fit into that. There was no image. It was just a bunch of individuals who had the same common goals and worked well together, you know, and I think that was the beautiful thing. It was just everybody got to be unique, and everybody's uniqueness and individuality was appreciated and valued.
Nice, nice. So how many were on your line?
So I was number 9, and there were 8 of us.
Nice, man. So what was it like to come out, you know, after you go through the process of joining, researching, and learning about the organization, and you find out it's not, you're not worshiping Satan, you know? What was that like? And, you know, and what was that like explaining it to your parents and people back home?
Oh, they still don't get it. It's an honor society as far as, you know, they can say it just, because it was the same colors as Phi Beta Kappa, and I was also Phi Beta Kappa, so it's all in one thing, right? Oh, so, okay. So it's hard to explain, and I never did. Right? But if you were on Howard's campus in spring 2006 in April when everybody's shows were, I mean, the SGRO show was the livest, most epic show that year. When I tell you the entire Caribbean Student Association, the entire African Student Association was on that yard with balloons, with banners. I mean, that it blew my mind. Like, everybody came out to see this Trini who's about to cross SGRO, right?
Oh, really? I mean, so that was like a thing.
It was amazing.
So that awesome. you had to really feel good.
It was just so much energy, and my, like, I'm standing there trying to focus, and everybody's screaming my name, Trinidad, Trinidad, JL. And it was just epic. It was epic, 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 epic. I had no idea. First of all, I was pledging. I didn't know anybody even knew I was pledging, because I wasn't really, it wasn't that deep to me to be like looking all forlorn and looking sad, and you know what I mean? Like, I was just living my life, you know? So I guess the word carried out. I had no idea that the impact of what I did meant anything to anybody, but apparently it did, you know, and it really inspired a lot of people, and you know, and it was just, I can't even explain how beautiful it is. I mean, I still watch the DVD of my show, and I look at it, I'm like, I can't believe I did that. Like, what the heck?
What about, I mean, did it inspire, like, other international students to seek interest in your organization?
Well, I mean, most of them, after the fact, I think it wasn't just SGRO. I think it was across the board, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't know if it was just me per se, but then the other ones like me appear, you know, and then I would get messages in my inbox to say, hey, you know, thank you for doing that, because if you didn't do it, I would have never ended up, you know, being a Zeta or whatever, you know, and
oh, wow, that's pretty
I think
cool.
The interest picked up, because now we know, oh, we can do this too. And yeah. It's not that we didn't know that we couldn't do it. I think it just had to be that one person who just like, I don't care, I'm about to go for this, you know? And I think that kind of just opened the door a little bit.
Nice, man. I'm glad to hear you had a positive experience with that, because, you know, when you're an outsider looking in, you don't really know. Even as an American, you hear stuff about organizations, what's going to happen when you make lines. So I'm glad to hear that you have no regrets. Are there any other organizations or any other people that you met while you were in undergrad that kind of had a huge impact on you?
Let's see if I can, man. I mean, just a little bit of everybody, you know. I did SGRU in my junior year, so I must have been doing something else beforehand. I can't even remember because I'm always doing something else. So, you know, I don't even remember, like, anything that had that level of impact that SGRU had for me. But the entire experience at Howard period, you know, in one big lump sum was awesome. And I think if I had to name another organization that I would have probably been as active in, it obviously was the CSA, you know.
So would you say that's like a must for any Caribbean student? You got to be a part of it.
I think it's a must for any student. I okay. really think so. I think so. I think it's just such a great way for you to see how vast the diaspora is and to realize the different aspects of Blackness. I think it's beautiful to see and to be a part of it so that you can kind of understand different people in new ways. I think everybody should do it.
Totally agree. I mean, I think that the cool thing about being that age and having those organizations is that all those relationships are just organic, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the best way to meet people.
Yeah.
So fast forward to graduation. So you get your doctorate in dental surgery. Did you get that from Howard?
Yeah.
Okay. So you were at Howard for dental school.
Yes.
How was that situation? Tell me. What was the thought process of staying at Howard? Why not go and leave and go somewhere else?
No, that was the plan. I went to Howard undergrad because I was going to Howard Dental School, and that was the plan. Yeah. And I'm a planner, and I stick to it. And so I spent a lot of my time in undergrad getting to know people at the dental school. You know, my whole thing, my whole philosophy is, you know, I'm not choosing the school. I'm choosing the people, you know? So I got to know the dean and, you know, the dean of admission and dean of academics and kind of get to understand who they are as people, you know, and at that time it was Dean Skinner from Jamaica, you know, and I would go and just talk to her and get to know her and stuff like that. And, you know, and she was just such a, I mean, anybody who knows Dean Skinner was one of those people who was just so supportive and, you know, encouraging and stuff like that. So, and I remember when I went to my dental school interview at Howard, I walk in, you know, and she says, "Hi, Jade," you know, and everybody's looking like, and it was like a group of us, you know, and like, "Oh, wow, she knows you." And I'm like, you know, like, that's the point. You know, you want to make sure that you're not just a name on paper, right? When they read your resume, your name should jump off and they should have a picture of who you are already. You
so
know?
It sounds
and
like you kind of had a, you know, you were intentional about a lot of things.
100%.
Really? Can you just talk about why that's important in reaching your goals? You know, because some people have goals in their head, but their actions don't really dictate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So can you talk about that for a second?
I think being intentional is paramount. You know, strategy. You know, you have to have a plan. You don't always have to stick to the plan, but you have to start somewhere. You know, a lot of us, oh, I wish I can be, I want to be. The only way to be something or to do something is to do it. There's no secret sauce. There's no inside way. You just got to put one foot in front of the other and start. And you really have to decide whether you're going to do something or not. And I think the hardest part of getting something done is your resolve. Right? You deciding that this is something that I'm going to do. And as long as you make that decision, everything else is just a matter of time. Right? Because all it takes is one opportunity after the next or one step after the other, you know, and eventually you're going to get there. You know, as long as you have that result that this is what you want to do. And you're going to have to not just take things by chance all the time. Right? I think a lot of people sort of leave things up for option too often. You know, we would, for example, you would see a job that you would love to take, but you're like, oh wow, 1,000 people are applying. I'm not going to apply because, you know, that's too many people, too many options. And I'm like, 1,000 people, all they need is one, and I'm one person. Like, I don't care about them. I'm going to get this job. What do you mean? 1,000 people? Great. That makes it even easier because then they can spot me being different even better.
A new ticketing platform that values event organizers so much more. EventNoir.com. Event Noir is the perfect ticketing technology for your events that rewards event organizers by helping them make extra money for each ticket sale they make. This platform truly allows event organizers to benefit from their own influence and hard work. Founded by veteran event organizers, Event Noir reinvests ticketing fees into its organizers that continuously use the platform and also enables its users with pricing power to adjust their rate for ticketing fees. But wait, there's more. Besides providing an easy process to set up events in a few steps and for attendees to browse for events and purchase tickets, Event Noir also features a variety of custom templates to create an event page, enhanced ticketing and attendee management tools, and even includes the option to add live streaming events and more. Don't wait any longer. Get started today with Event Noir, the perfect ticketing partner for your events.
So let me stop you for a second, Jay. Tell me about a time when you didn't get what you wanted, where you failed, and maybe you felt alone or like quitting. Did you ever have a situation where you quit, you failed, you felt lonely? You know, what's that like? Because I noticed that a lot of people that have accomplished these amazing things, they failed a lot.
Ashra, I failed all the time. Listen, my boards for dental school, part one and part two, I failed. I had to take the exam four times, each of them.
And you Phi Beta Kappa.
Each of them. It has nothing to do with
four times.
Four times.
Damn.
Four times.
So tell me.
The first time
you take it, you fail. Like, you're like, all right, I got this. I'm good.
The passing score was 75, right? I got 74, 74, 74.
Damn.
Back to back. And then the third time, once you fail three times, you have to sit out a year, right? I had to sit out a year, right? So imagine you have A's in these classes, right? And your professor's like, well, why are you repeating my class? You already got an A in it, right?
Well, you
got
to repeat the class.
Yeah, and then it's hard for them to understand, like, you know.
Well, you got to take the class over?
I had to sit the class over, but most of the professors, they just gave me the same grade I got the year before. And, you know, I spent that time in the clinic and stuff like that. But, yeah, I had to sit a whole year.
Damn.
Yep.
So what was that feeling like? Because you put pressure on yourself to be great. I can tell, like, you're smart and you've been intentional this whole time.
Yeah, you know, I think in the moment at that time, because I was a lot younger then, right? And in that moment, it was tough, you know. I think it was I think let's start with when the toughness started. It was first semester dental school. I got my first C, right? And that
first
joker
C.
First C
wait.
That joker, when I tell you, that wrecked me.
Wait,
right.
Wait, you got your first C in your life?
First C.
Oh, man, I've been getting C's since C's had C's.
Just, you know, and you know, ABC. And but it was just an understanding of, it wasn't like,
damn,
oh my God, like I got a C. It was more like, wow, this is what a C feels like. And I earned that C, Joshua. Like, I want to tell you, I worked hard for that C.
You was grateful
that
for
C
this.
That's felt like I won a prize, okay? So it kind of started to change my mind about, you know, grades and how, you know, and just all about effort and stuff like that. It changed a lot of stuff about me. But one of the most powerful things that I learned about failure from one of my professors, you know, I was really stressed out after the boards and, you know, and constantly failing and stuff like that. And, you know, and I was just talking to her and, you know, her name is Dr. Sam. And she said to me, she's like, Jade, it's just dental school. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, it's not life, it's dental school. So what, you failed dental school? You're brilliant. You could do anything. You can go to med school now. You can go be a hairdresser. You can go be the president. Who cares? It's just dental school. Like, why are you even depressed over this? It's like an insatiable hunger for education in me. Like, I'm like, I can't not be in school.
Did you actively seek out a mentor, any mentors at all?
That's a good question. So in the middle of my failure at dental school, there was this professor. At that time, she was the chairman of the Department of Dentistry at Howard University Hospital, Dr. Andrea Bonick. I get this email from Dean Skinner saying that the chairman of Howard University Hospital, Department of Dentistry, wants to meet with you. And I was like, what? How does she even know who I am, right? So I go over to Howard University Hospital. She meets me in the hallway, and she says, Jade, I heard you're failing. And I'm like, yeah. She's like, why? And I'm like, she doesn't even know me. Why is she, you know, she's like, why? Why are you failing? I'm like, I don't know. She's like, you know what? I'm going to make it my business that you graduate dental school. She took my hand. She took me to my office. We sat down. I cried. And she said, whatever she has to do, if she has to teach me over everything from freshman year to now, she's going to do it. She's an oral surgeon. She would leave the OR at 10 p.m., right? And midnight, me and her inside her house studying with the light on, her kids are sleeping, and she is reteaching me everything and breaking things down. And most of the time, it was just her telling me to figure it out, you know? And she kind of pulled my brain into pieces and kind of reshuffled my brain.
Is the next move, is that when you go to Cincinnati?
No. The next move was residency at Bronx Lebanon.
Oh, so after you complete dental school, you got to do a residency.
Yes. You don't have to do a residency. It's not mandated, but most of us do.
So this residency is to be a dentist, right?
So You're already a dentist once you graduated dental school and, you know, have your license, you pass your licensure boards or whatever. But it makes you a better dentist. And the residency I did is called a GPR, General Practice Residency. And I think the unique thing about that, it takes you out of the realm of just being a dentist, and it teaches you how to just be a doctor, you know, and how to marry the two of them.
So is that at a hospital, or are you working?
It's at a hospital. Yes. Okay. Yes. So you're taking that type call. Of
residency. You're not working for like a dentist that has their own practice. You're doing that at a hospital.
At a hospital, and you're also practicing general dentistry at the hospital's dental clinic, but you're also working in family medicine, and you're working with anesthesia. And you're rotating in the emergency department, and so you're doing many other things outside of the realm of just teeth.
So is that something that's paid, or is that?
Not everywhere, but where I went to, it definitely was.
Okay, nice. So you go that for the sole purpose of just becoming a better dentist. It's not something that's required.
It's not, exactly.
Okay, so then after that, I mean, what's the next move? Like, what are you doing now?
I stayed on an extra year to be chief resident. And after that, that's when I started University of Cincinnati, my second year, like in the middle of my second year. And that's an interesting story. I had no interest at that time of going back to school. I was done with school. I'm like, I have a doctorate. What else do I need, right? That was my mentality then. And, you know, a lot of people at that time, you know, especially after you struggle so much to get it. And the chairman of the department at that time, you know, was just walking around. He had this extra grant money, and he's like going door to door. Hey, does anybody want a master's? Does anybody want to do a master's? Does anybody want to do a master's? And he's like, no, nobody wants to go back to school. And then I turned around. I said, well, is it free? And he's like, yeah, it is. I'm like, bet. Yeah, I'm going to do it. Tell me where to go.
This is the MBA, right?
No, this was the MED.
Oh, the MED. Okay, so that's education, right?
Yes.
So that's like, you're like a double doctor.
So that's a master's. I only have one doctorate, the Doctor of Dental Surgery. So MBA, that's a master's of business administration, and the MED is a master's of education.
So when you're growing up in Trinidad, is it, like growing up there, is it, okay, I'm going to achieve, I'm going to go to like an American school, get good grades, and have a career in America? Or is it, I'm going to go to America, get an education, and then come back to Trinidad?
It can be both. And it depends on...
Because I always wondered, you know, just not to cut you off, but I always wondered that, like, man, you know, why... Because I talk to people from other countries and they're like, man, no, I love home, you know? So I'm like, man, how come with everything that goes on in America, there is a lot of opportunities here, but it just seems like a lot to leave home. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And kind of like you said, not necessarily make a new identity, but to just go into this whole new way of life and not go back home. Not to say that you can't go back to visit, mm-hmm. and all of that, but it's like, man, you know, do you feel a responsibility to like, man, now that I got this, now I'm going to go back home and pour into where I came from? Or is mm-hmm. it like, hey, Jay, you need to get out of here. Go do your thing in America.
You know, I think it is a little bit of both. And me being here, I'm still pouring into home, right? I am representing every Trinidadian girl with a dream. You know, and the more I achieve, the better their perspective is. And I hear it all the time. I get it in my DMs all the time, you know, that, oh, when they heard me speak, or when I did this presentation, or when I did this, or they saw me on TV and my dad's show, and that made them decide they want to go to Howard. Can I mentor them? You know, like, it happens all the time. And I think I believe that you need to be an answer to a question or a problem. And I chose, one of the questions I chose was, could any good thing come out of Trinidad and Tobago? And I am yes, you know? So even though I'm not home, you know, home is with me, you know? So everywhere I go, no matter what, as long as I open my mouth, they hear Trinidad, right? I have the accent, you know? So it's like, it's hard to separate the two. And I think that's where the cultural difference comes in. Because no matter how far we go or how high we achieve, the newspaper would always say Trinidadian blah, blah, blah.
I mean, how do you find balance when you know, you chief resident? That seems like a lot of responsibility, because I would imagine that you're like mentoring a lot of folks that kind of want to be in your shoes and that kind of going through that walk of being a dentist.
Yeah.
And then you're getting a master's degree in education. I mean, how do you find time to do Jay?
Well, they're 24 hours in a day, and that's a lot of time.
Okay.
Yeah, there's more than enough time. So I kind of just, you know, and I think because I've freed myself of the term balance, because there's no such thing. There's no such thing as balance. If you try to be balanced, you'll always go crazy.
Let's have a debate.
It's a matter of priority, right? Something will always have to take the background at some point in your life, right? Something will be in front and something will be behind. Something will be focused on and something will be neglected. And you are going to have to be able to choose. It's a matter of choice, right?
Saved.
Yes.
Single.
Yes.
Secure.
Yes.
The secrets to thriving in your single season. Jade.
Yes.
You know, let's talk about it, Jade.
Okay, let's talk about it.
Can we talk about it?
Let's talk about it.
Because you got Dennis, Chief, Masters in Education, like, now you're writing this book. Tell me the inspiration behind this book. And I want to talk about that book.
Okay.
I haven't read it, but I think that for you to write a book about it, there's obviously a need, and you must obviously, you know, I know it's a hot topic amongst women, and especially mm-hmm. black women, mm-hmm. you know, especially black women that want to marry a black man.
Oh, you know listen, what I'm saying? Speak on it.
So let's talk about it, Jade. I mean, you know.
Okay.
Tell me what made you sit down and had a nerve to write this book?
I had to write the book. I think first of all, it's 100% my experience, you know. What I had to sort of what I had to go through to just discover me and learn how to thrive, you know, and not just always be hustling or, you know, yeah, like I'm, you know, like I hate that word anyways, hustle, and you know, like I'm always grinding. I hate that word too, you know. I think the best word is thriving, you know. You know, I am at peace, I'm chilling, and my money is working for me. You know, I'm sitting here and my money's going ka-ching in the background somewhere, you know, and that's where I wanted to be. I wasn't there at that moment, right? And it was about I would say maybe like 3 years ago.
Okay.
I started on the journey to self-discovery. I think at that time, you know, I had just I was in the middle of, I had reached a pinnacle in my career that I didn't really think that I even knew I wanted or that I could have gotten to. And it was just like an awakening moment. You know, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this, you know? And at that time I was a surgeon in the operating room at Montreal Hospital doing, full month rehabs on special needs children and adults, right? And that was not even in my plan. And I'm sitting there in these people operating room, like with these people trusting their lives in my hands, and you know, I'm just sitting there. And I started thinking about my life, and you know, and at that time, I was really struggling with, you know, figuring out like, wow, I spent all this time doing all of this, and you know, I don't have any husband. I don't have a kid. I have, you know. And I'm
I want to read an excerpt. Can I read an excerpt?
Sure, sure.
Are you feeling pressure by family members and friends to find a mate? Do you feel resentment towards God for being single past the age that you thought you'd be married by? This book will bring you some much-needed clarity and peace. Mm-hmm. That's deep, Jay. I mean, that's who. So yeah. You telling me you in the operating room.
Yeah.
And you like, yo. like
what else is there for me to achieve?
Man, yeah.
Right? And I'm sitting there like, well, you know, I don't have a husband. You know, and I'm just there like, you know. And then I started like me and God, you know, we kind of tussle a lot, and you know, I was just trying to figure out, like, you know, what's going on. And, you know, and I was just trying to make sense of it all. And then he started taking me on this journey, you know, and I call that journey soul surgery. I mean, he just dug into me and just broke me into pieces and started building me back again and just changing my perspective on how I saw things and how I looked at relationships, how I looked at my own life.
Did you have toxic relationships that kind of are you bad at picking out folks? Oh,
you know, I don't think I was bad at picking out, because I told you I was intentional, you know. I just sometimes, you know, you just whatever, you know, like you know he's wrong, right? And just that's just the thing that women
you know he's wrong.
I mean, you just know, right?
And it's damn, just like, you ignored then, every sign. Do not enter.
I mean, every sign. And it's not like you ignore it because you see it, because it's blatant signs, you know, like he's clearly a dummy, you know? But I mean, cute, you know, like we're just dumb, right? You know, and I just came to a point in my life where I had to break it down. Like, what? Why was I in these cycles? Like, what was causing that? And why is it that my identity has to be wrapped up in who I'm with or whatever, you know? And I started to journey into figuring out that I am enough, and you know, that there are aspects to me that I did not discover yet, or I was not really putting enough focus on. And I realized that each of us individually have a purpose and a plan that we ordained and responsible for achieving. And, you know, your single season is a perfect time for you to focus on developing that, you know? And I think the impact that my life has now is much bigger than it was at that time, because I was limiting myself and I was waiting, you know, to blossom and bloom when I found that one or whatever. And then I was like, what the heck am I waiting on? I'm going to shine now. I'm going to achieve what I want to achieve now. I'm going to buy the property now. I'm going to do whatever I want to do now because I can. You know, and that's when I started to get my money together, you know, start to build my financial portfolio and really strengthen it, and, you know, buy property and, you know, go for that big job and, you know, go to Maine, you know, like crazy things like that, you know. And it's all about taking risks and being able to navigate life by just being bold and limitless and you know. And I think the book really got me to the point that, yes, now I know that I'm ready. I'm fully, I desire marriage. I would love to be in a relationship, but if it doesn't happen, I'm okay.
So would I be correct in saying that, man, maybe there were some self-esteem issues or some doubt that you might have had for no reason, or maybe that somebody kind of, I don't know. I'm not true, but, you know, is that kind of the foundation of the book?
You know, I think the biggest thing is that as I started writing it, it was less about relationships and it was more about life, right? Being a first and an only as a Black woman is tough, right? And imposter syndrome is real, right?
Wait, say that again, Jay.
Imposter syndrome.
Imposter, you're the second person on this show that has said imposter syndrome. What
was
is
it a Black
that?
Woman?
I've never heard. Yeah, she was a Black woman.
There you go.
She's one of my best friends from Howard. Mm-hmm. Tell me, what is imposter syndrome?
You know, it is a feeling where no matter how much you've achieved, no matter what your credentials say, you get into a particular position, and it's usually something on an executive level, like where I'm at now, and you just feel like you don't belong there. Like, you don't know what the heck you're doing. And it's like, I feel like I'm an imposter sitting in this chair with this title and with this paycheck. And I have no clue what I'm doing. You know?
Man, we got to talk about that paycheck. I heard that paycheck is heavy.
Oh, yes. It's big.
I heard that paycheck is heavy. But yeah, anyway, yeah. Imposter syndrome.
That is good.
So, you know, and I'm gonna introduce you to my friend too. Her name's Halima Nash.
Okay.
She was a campus pal with me. That's how we met. She's from Compton, mm-hmm. California. She was telling me that, you know, even when she got to Howard, she felt like she wasn't good enough because mm-hmm. she was seeing, you know, all these beautiful women. You know what I'm saying? Even though she had, like, she just didn't feel like she fit in, you know? But she turned out she's Miss School of Business. You know, she's chief something at her job, chief mm-hmm. At a nonprofit. I forget her title, mm-hmm. but she has a coaching business just like you. She coaches, and she was surprised to find out how many people that she coach that are executive. They feel like they imposters. I'm like, hell. I'm like, yo, this is crazy.
It's
like,
real.
What is going on? And she was like, it affects like minorities a lot, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I want to get into that, Jay. So
yeah.
Your book, is it for men and women?
It's for everybody.
And I like what you said about how, you know, it's not just about, it's about life.
Yeah.
You know? I like that. You know, I think it would be cool if we could kind of start a book club around this book.
We should.
Somehow, I don't know how it would work, but if we could kind of use the Howard alumni IG to maybe, you know, start some mm-hmm. type of book club and make this a book for the month, and we can do mm-hmm. some dialogue. We can talk offline about that. But I think it's cool. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's cool that you was able to pour your heart into something so that other people could benefit, you know?
Yes.
I like that, Jay.
And you know what, Joshua? The biggest part of my following for this book are married women and married men.
Really?
I had no idea that's what was going to happen. I did a book tour in Trinidad and Tobago in February, and people were coming up to me. I mean, the line was snaking okay, to get for the book signing. Wow. And tears, like, talking about how I saved their marriage. And the first person that said that to me was my mother.
Oh, wow, that's deep.
She was reading the proof, the draft of my book, and she called me crying, saying that she's been married. At that point, she was married for 42 years, and she said she never knew this. And here I am, her own daughter, single, not even married, and is solving problems that she's been having for 42 years.
So what, Jay, what makes you qualified to write a book like this?
You know what? I think sometimes a lot of us assume or think that because you are in a complicated situation, that the solution should be complicated as well. And sometimes...
Ooh, Jay, why are you so deep?
It's a simple answer.
Why are you so deep? Yeah, so simple. Jay, why are you doing
it? It is.
Why are you doing
life is life, man. You know? And I think a mistake people make is that they compartmentalize their life. This is my marriage life. This is my church life. This is my work life, you know? And when you compartmentalize, you think that the only answer for that particular portion of your life should be somebody who's succeeding in that portion of your life. But if you have somebody who's succeeding in that life, period, they can answer any question in any aspect of life. And that's just what it is. I desire that I have a man that makes me breakfast. So the man that I do have, I would say, hey, you know what? I like when you make me breakfast. Can you make me breakfast every now and then? I'd appreciate that. Whereas expectation is, I expect the man I have to make me breakfast. So the conversation goes like this. Well, it's 10 o'clock. You ain't going to fix me nothing. I see you made you one egg, so you're just going to eat your egg, and you're not going to ask me if I want an egg. Oh, you just made a pancake for yourself. What about me? You know what I mean? And then you're upset and you're mad at him, and he's like, dang, I just ate something. You were asleep. I don't know. And who wants to eat cold eggs? You know what I mean? Like, how do you know he wasn't going to fix your egg now that he knows you're awake? You know, but your expectation rubbed you of that desire and of that blessing, because you expected it a certain way and you didn't even give yourself a chance to really have him do it. Man. You don't know. And a lot of times we create these issues or problems in our lives that don't exist. And because we're impatient, we create the problems before the solution presented itself. You know, how do you know he wasn't going to make you a sandwich? Right? But because the sandwich doesn't appear when you want it and when you expect it, it's obviously he was going to make it. Or what's so wrong with asking him to make you the sandwich? It's the same result. You get a sandwich. But I think we're so married to the idea of this romantic thing that the sandwich is going to appear because he thought about it, you know, through our we can mind read from each other, and we have that such a organic connection that he just knows I need a sandwich. Like, we just gotta live in the life that we are in, you know?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that. So,
no problem.
You know, well, that's a whole nother, I feel like we can talk about that for hours.
We can.
You know, we can go on, we can have a whole round table, you know, discussion. Mm-hmm. You know, I would love to dissect a lot of those things that you just discussed, because, mm-hmm. A lot of people end up missing out on their blessings, man. And,
yeah.
You know, whether it's with a significant other or, like you said, whether it's with one of their children, you know, it's, you end up overlooking the things that somebody is good at, and it puts strain on a relationship. Because I've definitely experienced that, you know, firsthand, and I've seen it, you know.
Hmm.
So I do want to talk about some of the other things you've been able to achieve. You know, you mentioned that you have a certificate in theology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you obviously you're a dentist and would you call yourself a dentist or would you say a surgeon?
Well, at this time, I just call myself a dentist because I'm no longer in the operating room. So I wouldn't call myself a surgeon because I'm not performing surgery anymore. So.
Okay. So right now, currently, what are you doing currently?
So right now I am a director of a residency program.
Okay, you're director of a residency program.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, what are you doing on the side? Some of the things you enjoy on the side?
Gosh, so many things. Well, obviously, I'm in school still. So I'm doing the MBA now. The life coaching. I just started something called Leader School. It's a one-year program for leadership development. What else am I doing? a little bit of a lot, you know, but you know, none of it is like anything glamorous or anything. It's just really just feeding into all the interests that I do have and just kind of
I noticed that you know, obviously you've been to a lot of school and that's expensive. I mean, did it ever come a situation, did you ever have a situation where, man, you're incurring a lot of debt from going to school, or were you able to get scholarships most of the time?
No, I pay for school.
Okay. So you paid out of pocket?
I do.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. And so, you know, now that you're director of residency, is that right?
Yes. It's an advanced education and general dentistry program.
And that's in Maine, right?
Yes.
So that's in Maine. What school is that, or what institution?
So it's a teaching health center. A school. Mm-hmm.
Why Maine, though? I mean, was the opportunity that good that you couldn't pass up?
So I was in New York City, and Maine comes a-calling, saying I'm double what you make in there in New York City if you come on over here. So kind of like that.
Money talks, don't it?
I wish it was something deeper and more.
Money talks, don't it, Jay?
You know, and it wasn't just the money. It was really the opportunity to have a position that aligned more closely to what my goals were. And, you know, I really do want to follow the path of academia and really try to go into the highest level of higher learning. And, you know, if I have to like really set a goal, my biggest goal would be to be a president of a university. You know, like that's where I see myself. You know what I mean? Like, man, ultimately I'm get there. I don't know how, I don't know which school, where, but I know that that's ultimately the design that I have for what I, the impact that I want to have, I think will be greatest felt in a position like that.
Man, that's awesome. What was it like to get an offer and to somebody not just offer you more money, but double?
Yeah.
Because you already, what were you doing at that time when you got that call?
I was the director of operating room services for the general practice residency program at a hospital in New York.
So you're director of operating. That was a
operating
lot.
Operating room. So that's the OR, right?
What are the responsibilities there?
So basically, it's part of the whole curriculum practice residency program. So that's where, you know, you have young doctors, graduates from dental school who are coming to train. And so you're basically like a clinical instructor, a professor. And we had a great program for special needs patients. And it would really be the sickest of special needs patients who can't get seen in a regular dentist's office and would need to be seen in a hospital setting and would need to be completely asleep under general anesthesia, right? In a sterile setting, like an operating room, you know, where surgeries happen. And we had such a great demand that, you know, we created a rotation around it where the residents would spend 4 weeks with me and we would go in and basically knock out cases three days a week back to back, you know, where we're on our feet for like 12 hours straight, just, you know, doing full mod rehabs on these kids and adults. You know, we're talking autism, cerebral palsy, Alzheimer's, anything you name it, all those rare deformities, you know, name it, you just all of it, you know, and just taking care of that. I mean, it was just such meaningful work.
So you directed, so you're the one in charge of that program.
I was in charge of that. And I was in charge of it, and it was me doing the work.
So it's Black Girl Magic. So what was it like when that first check cashed? Was it kind of took over your body, or was it just like, hey, man, that means nothing to me? It's just
you know, yeah. It just was not. I mean, I think it all happened at the same time. Like when I moved up here, the first thing I did was bought property. You know, so I think that was more of the euphoria, like, you know, being able to just walk into a place, the first day you're here, sign, you know, on the dotted line and get the keys, you know. I think that was what kind of took the moment. And then, so I guess the checks was sort of like, I finally could start doing what I wanted to do. You know, because you know how sometimes you're like, well, man, if I was making so-and-so-and-so, I'm about to so-and-so-and-so-and-so, you know? And I think this answered a lot of the questions. So
you sold and sold and sold.
Well, this answered some of the questions that I had and some of the problems that I saw. So now that I'm in an opportunity to help people, that's what I do, you know? Like, you know, a lot of people, you know, like, wow, you give away your money? Yeah, I do. I do all the time, you know? Somebody would call me, especially Neos on campus, hey, I can't make tuition this semester. I got you. You know, like, and that is the best feeling, you know, to be able to do something for somebody that will perpetually continue giving. Because, you know, you give into somebody's education, that never ends, you know? And I think that that's the most exciting part about achieving. It's not that the money, which is great, you know, but it's the money isn't for me, you know. And I think that's the magic of this, you know. It's
absolutely,
it's what I can do with it is what's the powerful thing.
I like that. So what do you tell the 17-year-old, 18-year-old Jade that's coming into Howard right now? What advice do you have for them?
Boy, I would be like, girl, you are so many things. Like, you are phenomenal. You are resilient. Please don't listen to the lies. Please don't get distracted by all the naysayers and everybody who's just hating and stuff like that, because I really had a struggle, you know, being able to figure out my identity, you know, for a strong while in undergrad. I wasn't trendy enough, right? You know, and because I had American friends, you know, so some people would be like, oh, you think you're better than us or whatever. And I mean, it was a struggle. It was a struggle, you know, and I let it get to me so many times, you know. And I think I would have told myself, just be you. Just be you 100% of the time. Just be you. You know, and I think it would have been an easier road. But if I have to be completely honest, I think my failures are really what created this life that I live now. So I can't say that I would have been who I am now if I didn't have those struggles or those failures, because it there's no way, because I would have never known that this is what I would have wanted to do. I would have never known that.
What about this? So 100 years from now, what are we saying about Dr. J.P. Duncan?
Dr. Duncan was a revolutionary. She was fearless. She broke down barriers. She blew roofs off. She blew the ceilings off. She took everybody she could with her when she bulldozed those buildings down. She opened the doors and she let everybody bum rush into doors and into spaces that we didn't belong. She's a change agent. She turned the world upside down. That's what you're gonna say about me. Hmm. Well, read anyways.
I love it. I love it. So if somebody wanna get in touch with you and follow you and just keep up with you, I mean, how would they go about doing that?
Oh, you can follow me on Instagram. My Instagram is open. It's at @virtuous9. Virtuous, spell the word out. Number, the whole word number, and 9 for my line number. And yeah, you can follow me there. And anything that you need, DM me. I got you. My website is under construction. The truth is, I have not launched it because then I'll have more things to do with my time. And I just, right now, I have a lot going on. So I don't want to get any requests for mentoring or coaching at this time, you know, so that's really why I'm not letting I took my website information down, so because it was just too much. I don't have the time at this moment to deal with all those other things that I was doing. But yeah, find me on Instagram and whatever, you know, I got you.
Okay, great. So are you ready to get into some rapid fire questions and some Jeopardy?
Okay. Let's go.
Okay, let's see what you know. you know, what dorms did you stay in at Howard?
Annex.
Oh, you say the annex. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Cool. Got you. All right, so we're gonna start with Jeopardy. See what you know about Howard.
Oh boy.
All right, so what year was Howard founded?
1867.
Very good, very good. What is the Howard motto?
The Howard motto?
Yeah.
Veritas something, I don't know.
Yeah, it is. I think it's Veritas e Utilitas, something. But it's truth and service.
Truth and service, I know that part, but the Veritas something, yeah.
What is the Black National Anthem?
The words, I mean, the, I was just singing it because I was looking at graduation, the commencement ceremony. I forget how it starts, but.
Finish this sentence.
Okay.
Lift every voice and sing.
Voice and sing. Okay, yes. Lift every voice and sing.
Till earth and heaven ring.
Okay, yes. You know, I didn't grow up with that, but I learned that at Howard, yes.
What? Finish this sentence. Reared against the eastern sky.
Probably there and hilt up high. High above the, what the something,
the lake so blue.
The lake so blue stands for Howard, firm and true. There she stands for truth and right. Yeah, I know that one because we had to learn that to pass swimming. You got to A, you got to doggy paddle and say that.
Nice. Finish this sentence. I'm so glad.
I went to Howard U and not a school.
Okay, got it.
I went to both.
Okay. You stayed in the annex, right?
I did, and then the East Towers after.
What's the address of the annex?
It was 1248 or something. I forgot.
Man.
And I just applied for something and that popped up.
2225 4th Street?
No, it wasn't. I don't think it was the side street that had the name.
Next question.
Yeah.
What is the zip code of Howard University?
Shoot, you're asking me some hard questions. I mean, I live so many places. So I know the dental school was 500 W Street, Washington, D.C., Northeast Washington, D.C. Was it, I know it had 50 something in there. What is it? 20059.
Who is the president of Howard?
Oh, my gosh, my countryman, Dr. Wayne Frederick.
Ah, that's right.
I love him. Love him. He's phenomenal.
Who was Howard named after?
Otis.
General Oliver Otis Howard.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Are you ready for this rapid fire?
No, because I'm failing all of this.
That's okay.
Okay.
Is homecoming better? And so with rapid fire, you have to answer the question. You can't give a sentence answer. You just have to give the first
one
thing,
word.
Yeah, one word. Whatever comes to your head.
Okay.
Is homecoming better as a student or alum?
Alum.
HMO or PPO?
Probably PPO.
Favorite Howard moment?
Graduation.
HBCUs.
Howard.
Biggest failure?
I don't know if I had it yet.
When did you first learn to say no?
2 years ago.
Drew or Carver?
Neither!
Okay. Annex or quad?
Oh, come on. Annex.
Okay. U Street or Adams Morgan?
I'm Liam, Adams Morgan. I loved Adams Morgan.
Okay. You have to sit one of these, start one, or bench one. No, okay. Sit. No, it's start, bench, or cut. My bad.
Start, bench, or cut. Okay.
So, charter day, graduation, homecoming.
Start with graduation, bench, charter day, and cut homecoming.
Ooh, wow, that was cold. Man.
Probate. I like galas. And the galas are always at graduation and charter day, so I like to dress up in formal wear.
Probate.
What comes Do I have to wait mind? Till the rest of them? Oh, probate. Oh, this is rapid fire again?
Yeah, what comes to mind when I say probate?
Absolute paradox. The Eric. Best line that ever crossed that hour.
Okay. Well, that wraps up our conversation for today. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Yes.
I had a lot of fun, man. I appreciate you sharing everything.
I did too. This was fun.
Thank you for joining the HU Movemaker podcast, where we highlight folks that have contributed to the Howard legacy at the highest levels. To hear more interviews or purchase merchandise, please visit www.humovemakers.com.